You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 511, Out of the Blue and Into the Black. Hello, this is the Punk News Podcast. I'm Adam White, recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me tonight, and I believe my only accompaniment tonight, Mr. John Gentile out of COVID Town America.
Adam, I'll be the Stephen Steels to your Neil Young. How about that? No, I'll be the David Crosby to your Neil Young. How about that?
As long as
and by that, I mean I'll donate my genetic material.
You'll donate your which, sorry?
My genetic material to Melissa Etheridge.
Oh, well, I mean that's kind of your duty. There's only two of us. We don't have a third host tonight, so we're going to make do, but that's okay because there's lots of crazy bullshit that we have to talk about tonight. Before we get into any of that crazy bullshit, if you want to send us mail, it is podcast@punknews.org. That is how you do it. John, is there any mail that we want to touch on before we get to the general nuttiness?
Yes. Do you want to should we read heavy duty mail first? Or flimsy, light, and fluffy mail.
Let's get the heavy duty one tied up and done with before we get too tired and our answers get stupider.
This comes from UMX. Are you only going to talk about politics and tell us what to do from now on? I can stomach a little uninformed political opinion here and there, but it seems like you only talk about politics and buying into the Democrats' lie. I tune into the Punk News Podcast for news on punk, not news on politics, from UMX.
Do we only talk about politics?
No, but we've been talking about it a lot lately, and we're going to keep doing it at least until the election and maybe even after the election because we are facing an incredibly important election now, and I think your decision should be pretty clear at this point. We're going to talk about that whole concept in a few minutes, but no, listen, punk and politics are intertwined at their core. Politics is not the only aspect of punk, but it is a very important aspect of punk, and we're going to keep talking about it. And that's that. And honestly, most people that say, "Oh, I don't like talking about politics," usually are on the wrong side of history, politics wise. And I don't even like speaking in those terms because I don't like making it our team versus your team. I'm totally against that. But in this year, there's a lot to reconsider, at least just for the short term period. Next, this is from Gemma, your Punk News Podcast. I wanted to bring to your attention the Green Day reissue of Insomniac. Not only does it have rare out-of-print songs, but it is on double vinyl. Green Day, in addition to being bona fide rock stars, have continued to support up-and-coming bands. John, they took your favorite band, Dog Party, on tour. And Billy Joe and the other members routinely send money to Gilman Street and other places in the Bay Area. Nobody's perfect, but Green Day is doing a good job of being famous and also being punk. And that's from Gemma. With a G.
I have no beef with Insomniac or that era of Green Day. And I hate to say this, it's going to sound like I'm shitting on Green Day, but I mean, those records all seem the more better to me, given where Green Day is from a sonic standpoint at this point in their career. So, you know, if you're in the market for like a big, super cool reissue, double vinyl, B-side packed Insomniac package, then all the power to you. And if someone gave one to me, I would certainly not, you know, wouldn't throw it in the bin. What was the point here? Was this just an ad for Insomniac? Did we just get astroturfed by the people?
I think Green Day might be short on sales, so the writing wasn't a pseudonym. trying to move some product.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I'm sure Insomniac is a fine product. If you buy it, make sure to enter in the offer code Punk News on checkout, and you'll get 10% off, and we'll get paid. That's not true. I don't even know where I'm directing you to go. Really, what you should do is get your credit card and email it to John Gentile at at punknews.org, and he can facilitate all the transactions for you.
Yes, just send it to me, and I'll make sure you get your Green Day products in the mail.
Mm, yeah. I don't really... John, I don't know if I am... I don't know if I am... If I have the mental capacity to bridge the amount of stories that we have to sort through all of a sudden, because I can't get through the mail right now without the stumbling and falling in a hole. And I mean, like, there's some stuff to grapple with this week.
Yes, there is. Are you asking me to take the wheel?
I'm asking you to light a candle for my performance on tonight's episode, because it is not going to be a great one. So, do we have any more mail, or do we get into this?
Podcast at punknews.org. Send us money. And you know, for the past year, Adam and I were saying, we're going to figure out a way that you can pay us money. And we never did.
Yeah, we just sort of punted on that. I mean, we will one day. And there's more important things, right? And this goes back to, like, why are we talking about politics and everything else? It's just like, there's more important things that have to be dealt with in the immediate. And unfortunately, those important things are mentally exhausting and destroying us in just dozens of ways. So one of the things that has contributed to that is all the celebrities in the universe are lining up right now to make their endorsements for the US presidential election and everything else. And I guess, much to the chagrin of our letter writer earlier, the vast majority of really anyone that's voicing an opinion about this that isn't, you know, James Woods or Scott Baio or one of those usuals, are voicing something in support of Joe Biden's campaign, or at least, and I think this is maybe the operative thing here, they may not be necessarily giving full-throated endorsements to Joe Biden, but they are definitely giving full-throated endorsements to not vote for President Trump. And we're in this situation where it seems like the majority of anyone that's got a soapbox right now is lining up against Trump the individual in particular in a way that feels more uniform to me, I guess, than what we would have seen in campaigns past. So one...
I gotta pause you right there, and I distinctly recall 4 years ago, Hillary was way ahead in the polls, and everyone was like, Hillary's going to crush Trump, Hillary's going to crush Trump. And then came election night, and that's not what happened at all. So I don't have that confidence. I mean, listen, I hope Trump loses.
But I don't get me wrong. I have no confidence in anything right now, and the only confidence I have is that 2020, as a living entity, is trying to kill me and the rest of us, and it will do everything possible to make that happen. So, you know, given that this eldritch horror is just trying to make this truly the worst year that any of us have had to experience, I fully expect him to not only win, but win and then grow to like 300 feet tall and just start breathing fire. But the point I was making was that we're in the celebrity endorsement round of the pre-election nuttiness, and for the vast, vast majority of anyone that is speaking out on it right now is taking the Democratic side of things. Except,
or is that just people that are in your news feed? That's my concern. You know what I mean?
Oh no, I'm
because your, I mean, this is not news to you, but Adam White's news feed is tailored to Adam White's interests, even if he's not doing that on purpose. You know what I mean? So you can very much get caught up in an echo chamber, not even know it. Am I incorrect on that, Adam?
No, you're absolutely correct. What I'm looking at is that the people that have a big enough voice that they're going to make news by the fact that they've spoken up at all. You know, I'm not looking at going and saying like, oh, Fat Mike is, of course, anti-Trump, or, you know, Jell-O is, of course, anti-Trump, because, you know, those things come across in my newsfeed all the time. I'm talking about the news where, say, like, Taylor Swift has gone and activated her legions of, you know, online fans, you know, for the cause. Those types of things that make news in and of themselves because of who the people are. So we had one of those that cropped up this week, and it's one that I guess John and I have to grapple with, because it is a pain in the ass thing to have to contend with. So John Lydon, Johnny Rotten, you know who he is if you're listening to this podcast, of course. Johnny Rotten of the Sex Pistols, John Lydon, Public Image Limited, has come out and said that he is absolutely voting for Trump. He commented that Biden is incapable of leading America. He has said that he emphasizes with Trump because he too has been called a racist. He actually said he'd be daft as a brush to not vote for him. Called him the only sensible choice, and this and that. So what I don't think is useful, and I guess we can approach this in both ways, which I don't think is super useful, is to try to deconstruct Johnny's politics or convince him otherwise by shouting into the void. We can certainly do that, and I have a read on it. But John, what does someone like us, who are unabashed Lydon fans, from a musical standpoint, what do we do when the person who you so enjoy and admire from an artistic standpoint comes out and takes a position that is pretty much dead set contrary to what you're shooting for? Like, what does one do?
Well, one thing that I will highlight is I've never been of the belief, and most people, it used to be that you should respect other people's opinion. And then it became, you should respect other people's opinions, except for certain ones, which are so reprehensible that if they have those rare reprehensible opinions, they should be, quote, canceled. They use that term at the time. Now it's sort of, if someone doesn't agree with you at all, in any respect, they should be canceled, or at least, you know, eliminated or deleted or whatever. I can't get with that at all. That being said, this is painful, Adam. And poor old me, I've gone through this twice in my music fandom life. Morrissey and Rob Miller of Amoebic. And this kind of cuts deeper than either of those two. It cuts deeper than Morrissey, because I'm a much bigger fan of John Lydon than I am Morrissey, although I am a big fan of Morrissey. It cuts deeper than Rob Miller, just because Rob Miller, you can kind of explain, like, well, he's not going through a great time right now, and so he might be saying whacked out stuff. But some people, you can't blame them for saying whacked out stuff, because they're confused, or at their core, they don't actually mean it, you know, and that's mental health. And people like to say mental health is, oh, you know, I sometimes just want to be by myself, you know. But, you know, Rob Miller's true mental health issues. John Lydon, you can't say that. He's pretty, you know, concrete. And so I used to love, you know, jumping in the ring and fighting vehemently on behalf of Morrissey, or fighting vehemently on behalf of John Lydon. People say, Sex Pistols is just a boy band. You know, John Lydon is just a sellout because he did Butter. And it's like, no, he did Butter so he could finance Pill and save a bunch of orangutans, you know. And you saying, you know, Joe Strummer is a deity, you know, St. Joe Strummer. Dude was banging chicks around Spain while his wife was in labor. Meanwhile, John Lydon, his wife has Alzheimer's. His brother has Alzheimer's. He's staying at home, personally taking care of both of them, because he loves them so much. And I love that fight, Adam. I love saying, no, Lydon's the true punk. You're wrong. And I diss on Joe Strummer a lot these days. I don't even know why. I'm a huge Clash fan. But I love John Lydon, the Sex Pistols.
Well, no, you dish on Strummer for, I think, a very important reason, and a reason that to me is very punk, which is that, like, idol worship is shitty. Like, to me, like idol worship is a problem, and we as a genre, as a community or something like that, should maybe stay a little bit away from that. Like, with, like, the whole, like, bullshit detector concept that, you know, that punk should be predicated on should be anti-idol in the first place. So the fact that we have taken, you know, your Joe Strummers and your Ian MacKays and people that, you know, I won't argue did a lot of good, or, you know, and create a lot of good art. But like the fact that we take these people and beatify them has always been something that I'm uneasy with. But anyways, though, sorry, continue there.
Nice use of beatify, Adam. So the problem is, what do we do? And I was trying to think, how is John Lydon getting to this position? And if he just said, you know, no one's looking out for you, don't trust the government, I'm not voting, I could somewhat respect that, although I think in this circumstance, that's definitely the wrong choice. But he's like, he's saying, I don't trust politicians, don't believe politicians, they're all liars, which is kind of, I mean, my experience has been kind of true. But doesn't mean that Trump isn't, I mean, Trump has been proven a liar time and time again. Trump, and I'm not saying I agree with any of these things, Trump said, I'm going to lock up Hillary, I'm going to put up a wall. He didn't do either. You know, he's just a con man. And it's disappointing that John Lydon doesn't seem to see that. And so I don't know if his brain is scrambled or if he truly believes this or what. I mean, like, if you're against politics or the government or whatever, that's fine. The notion as Trump, as an outsider coming in to clean everything up, maybe you could have floated that 4 years ago. But Trump has had 4 years to prove that he's the outsider coming to change everything. And to the contrast, he's only made everything much worse in those regards. You know, he's made people more divided. He's made the government much more corrupt. John Lydon's big thing is, I'm anti-corruption and dishonesty. And that's what John Lydon is. I mean, I'm sorry, that's what Trump is, you know. So I part of me is still like, well, that's just John Lydon, you know, doing the wearing the swastika thing, you know, which is not cool, you know. But I think he's serious here. And so I've got a real personal – and I'm not – and actually, we're going to talk about Milo from The Descendants in a minute because he talked about this exact thing. I'm not going to turn my back on John Lydon forever. I'm not going to say I hate the Sex Pistols. I'm still a big fan. I still like John Lydon. I just think he's making the extreme wrong decision here. And I'm not sure why. He says, you know, people say Trump is racist and they say I was racist, so I like Trump. Well, Trump is racist and John Lydon is not racist. So I think – and that wound was 20 years ago. So let it go, John, you know. So the point being is I'm always going to be a fan of John, you know, John Lydon. But I just – it's not in my heart anymore to get in the ring and fight vehemently on his behalf. And it's to a small degree, maybe to a medium degree, it's somewhat become tainted, you know, whereas John Lydon used to be this amazing contradictory artist that did something I didn't agree with, but it was on the name of art or interesting political thought. Now he's making a decision that I think is objectively the wrong decision, and you can't really defend it. And if only because you can't defend locking children in cages. You just can't defend it. You know what I mean? And so if he said, I'm not voting for either because I think Biden's, you know, a chump, and I think Trump's locking kids in cages, I could somewhat respect that. But it's an indefensible position, as opposed to a position that I disagree with. And there is a certain danger line when you say, well, this is an indefensible position, you should respect everybody's opinion. And I guess I do, but you do also have to have a line somewhere. You know, you can't say white power is great, white power is great, which Trump has essentially done, and say, oh, that's his opinion. You can't tolerate that. So there are a few areas where someone is objectively wrong. And I think Lydon is objectively wrong here. And I think it's an important thing to be correct about. And so from our perspective is, I'm still going to enjoy him, but where it used to be pure, unfiltered awesomeness, it's got a slight taint, which hopefully Trump will lose the election, and this taint will wash away almost to it's nothing. If Trump wins, I think that blotch will become bigger.
See, we did a podcast about the Ramones last episode, and, you know, you've got someone like Johnny who is, you know, famous for being a conservative amongst a pretty teeming swath of liberal musicians, right? But I never listen to the Ramones and have that crop up as a problem for me. And so I don't think it's necessarily like a left and right thing why this bothers me. I think it comes down to what you said, which was that it's one thing for him to have made this statement 4 years ago and taken it as the, you know, oh, I'm voting for the anti-politician because I hate politicians. And it's another thing for him to to play this as some, I don't know, like absurdist, contrarian, you know, rabble rousing thing. But that's not my read on it, because his statements about his accusations of racism and everything else, and just it doesn't seem to match up with him doing a performance. So I have to believe he's genuine about it. But then the last thing that I want to do in the world right now is like try to both sides situations where like people, and in particular children, have been harmed. Like there are things that this administration has done that are, I mean, to me, like unquestionably reprehensible, and have nothing to do with the traditional kind of like, you know, left-right divide over, you know, are you going to spend, or are you going to save, or any of those kinds of things, right? Like it just doesn't work that way. It doesn't fit the way that I would be used to having a political disagreement with someone. So I can't figure out an angle by which I can go and I can look at what Johnny's saying here and giving him the benefit of the doubt for it. It seems like a bad, he's got a bad take, and it seems like it's founded on some pretty shitty reasoning, and that shitty reasoning involves ignoring a lot of harm that has happened and will happen. So yeah, that's bad. That said, I mean, I guess I'm like you in that, like, I'm not the kind of person that can cancel an artist for an opinion like this. Were it be that they did something monstrous, then I'd probably have to approach that a lot differently. But in this case, yeah, it's just sort of like a weird taste in my mouth now when you know, some pill song comes on. So don't know what to do. But John, some other artists had some other takes here. Who are we going to contrast this with?
Well, let's not contrast. Let's just work our way down the spectrum.
All right.
Ice Cube today pulled a near lie in himself, or actually it was yesterday. And this blew my mind almost as much as lying to me. Ice Cube, 4 years ago, put out an album called Well, of course, Ice Cube is in NWA. He's got a song called F the Police. You know, everyone knows who Ice Cube is. 4 years ago, or actually 3 years ago, he put out an album called Everything's Corrupt, and the first track was Arrest the President, and it's all about how he wants to arrest Donald Trump and throw him in jail for being a criminal. It was a great album. He's been kind of weird the past 4 weeks on Twitter, and he's been doing the same thing that, like, John Joseph of the Cro-Mags does, and some other, you know, even Tom Araya of Slayer, honestly. Is he's busting on the left side, saying, don't trust politicians, popping on Biden or whoever, but never popping on the right, but saying, don't trust a politician, and always beating up Hillary, but never beating up the other side, you know, which is weird. And then he put together this thing called Contract with Black America, and it was Ice Cube's 13-point plan on how to improve the lives of Black Americans. And actually, I don't think he invented this, but he has a division that I hadn't heard before, but I guess it makes sense. His division is he's specifically interested in helping out, I think it's AWOA, people in America that were descendants of slaves brought to America, as opposed to any person of color or Black people in America, if that makes sense. And so that's what his plan is specifically aimed at improving the lives of, you know. And then he was talking, like, mildly taking shots at Biden a few weeks ago. And then yesterday, the Trump campaign manager or somebody about that, but thanks to Ice Cube for helping us out with the Platinum Plan. And the Platinum Plan is this cockamamie plan that Trump is sort of touting as the New Deal, even though it's not at all. But we're not even going to get into that. And it's like, why is the Trump campaign thanking Ice Cube? And then Ice Cube goes on Twitter and says, well, I reached out to the Democrats and the Republicans, and the Democrats said, we'll talk to you after the election. The Republicans got back to me and talked with me. And then it's like, is Ice Cube supporting Trump? Ice Cube? You know, and then people be like, Ice Cube, what's the deal? And he basically has been very vague. He hasn't said that he does support Trump. He hasn't said that he doesn't. But he definitely hasn't said don't vote for Trump. And he's sort of suggesting that he likes that Trump responded to his contract with Black America plan. And it's like, Ice Cube, you put out a song 4 years ago how much you hate Trump. And your entire career has been, you know, against police injustice pretty much. And now you're like, Trump's great? And he's not saying that Trump's great, but it's like, it's a huge bummer. And I was checking out on Twitter. It seemed like most people in the Black community were upset by this and not like, yeah, Ice Cube, you're right, which was comforting to me. But it's like, I guess Ice Cube sees himself like Trump in that they're both self-made men, except for Ice Cube really is a self-made man and Trump is not, you know. And like I said, with Lydon, you've got this fantasy of this outsider coming in and changing everything, except for Trump had that chance for the past 4 years, and he broke every single promise that he made. So, Ice Cube, why do you think that he's going to keep a promise with you, particularly when he's enacted and been explicitly vocal about racist policies towards people of color? Talking about, you know, purposely hitting people's heads on cars and that kind of thing, I wouldn't even get into that, you know. Or, you know, there's good people on both sides, you know, with that cockamamie crap. So it's like I'm freaking out, Adam. Like Ice Cube? Ice Cube! You know what I mean? What is going on?
This...
See,
I hadn't run into this story at all until we started recording, so... It says something, I think, about how celebrities like attention, and sometimes they'll take that attention where they can get it. And
yeah, I don't think that's because Ice Cube was very political in the beginning of his career, not so political in the midpoint, and then he became very political again, you know, within the past 10 years or so. And so I think his contract with Black America is a genuine attempt to say, I've got some cachet of power or cash of power. I want to try to do good with the power that I have, which I respect. But saying that Trump is going to be like the answer to these problems, like what planet are you on? I don't think he's doing it for celebrity. I think he's doing it because he wants to effectuate change. I guess he's sick of the Democratic Party for saying, oh, we care about Black people. And he feels that they don't actually. I can understand that. But you think Trump cares about Black people? You know?
I mean, if he believes in his plan, right? If he's truly invested in the plan that he's got, and you want to take it from a little bit of a nihilist standpoint, where he's going to look and say that, like, you know, doesn't matter who win, both of them are going to find some way to screw me. But if the plan can be embraced by someone on either side, well, then I'm moving the ball, right? Like you can line up the rationale that way. But again, it ends up in the same, you have to make the same rationales that you'd make to try to justify Lydon, where you can say, all right, well, like, you can go that way, but you have to do that well, on the other hand, ignoring all of this bad shit that you should be running away from. And, you know, can he make the deal with the devil to help get that thing, to help get that plan out there and, you know, into some legislator's hand? I don't know. Like, I don't, like, is that worth ignoring all the bad stuff that you're getting in bed with? I mean, it wouldn't be for me, but hey, I'm not Ice Cube. And John, if there's anything that this show has proven over the years, is that I'm not Ice Cube.
Well, Adam, listen, you're both self-employed. You're both, I don't know, Adam, do you hate cops?
I'm not a fan. I haven't written songs about it though, right? So I don't know how far you want to go down the hate road, because like if I haven't put lyrics to paper or anything, right? Like it's my
sure.
You know, I'm reasonably annoyed given what I've learned. I think Ice Cube.
I should not Has Suge Knight ever threatened to beat you up, but you held strong and said, I'm not going to do a deal with you? Have you ever had something like that happen?
That's happened to all of us.
Yeah. Anyways, Adam, let's work our way down the spectrum to the flip side. How about that?
Okay. So.
You want me to take it?
No, I mean, I go ahead. I told you, I'm out of sorts. I'm falling apart. No, okay. So here, so the next one here. So you want to do Milo next?
Yes.
All right. So Milo of the Descendants, he is gone. He has put together a record of ukulele music, that includes a number of political songs, political takes that he's put together. The one of them, interestingly, riffs on a Sex Pistols song. And this is something that did not go did not go unnoticed by Mr. John Gentile when you interviewed him about this, what, like 2-3 days ago?
I interviewed him 2 or 3 days ago, up on the website in about 3.5 hours. What do you think of that?
There you go. So Milo's record that he's put out, it's an EP. It's called Rebuke, in which the U in the word rebuke is capitalized. So there's three tunes on there that blast Trump. It's out now on Epitaph and Fat, which is kind of a, you know, interesting thing from a 90s kid standpoint. So you John, you went in and you asked him, you brought up the fact that the news had been buzzing about Lydon's endorsement of Trump, and what do you have to say? How do you take that?
His response was actually what I would call old school punk rocker, which I definitely appreciated. His response was, "I'm not into cancel culture at all. I respect other people's opinions, but I'm not. I know he didn't agree with Lydon, but I can't remember if he said I think Lydon is wrong." But I think he made the argument, and you know, Milo's a very intelligent guy. He made the argument that when you start canceling people and just refusing to give people a voice, that's kind of how you get into the explosive scenario that we're in, which a screaming match, my team versus your team, let's play dirty, and that's how you cause division, which I agree with that statement 100%.
Milo's politics haven't shocked us in this case, right? Like during the Bush era, the band put out that what was it, the American EP, I think. Was it called American? What was it called?
American,
right? Yeah, you're right. Like that American EP came out, and there were definitely songs that Descendants released during that era that fit right into the. To the rock against Bush sentiment that was coming out of the punk scene at that time. Milo has not diverged, I think, from what we would expect to come out of him. But yeah. So is there anything else in particular that you wanted to voice about this, other than the fact that like, A, it's out, people should hear it, and it's Milo, so it's great, but it's It represents sort of the flip, that feeling where one of your musical heroes comes out and says something that does not knock you upside the head, I guess.
Yeah, I got something to say about this, Adam. First of all, it was actually surprisingly good. I actually really think this EP, maybe it's timely and not timeless, but that's okay, especially now. But Adam, this weirded me out and freaked me out and made me worried. This got a ton of hate from the punk news commenters. I got no positives. Both the interview and the news post about the record and in the Facebook was a shit show. And it was either, you know, shut up, we want Trump, or it was, yeah, Milo, real perceptive, you know, duh. You know, like, I'm like, isn't this what our punk rockers are for? Or big, like, he got nothing but hate from, like, I truly was surprised at it, that people weren't like, yeah, at least Milo's saying the right thing and reminding us and staying strong and making the point that democracy itself is under attack right now. And he's underscoring it. Not that we don't know, but right now it's great to, you know, reemphasize that and highlight that again. And I thought people would be like, yeah, Milo, you know, the Scene of the Descendants, our champion, you know, but he got hate, nothing but hate, Adam, like nothing but hate. This really, I mean, is it just because commenters are bigger dicks than people that just click like or don't do anything? Or or do we have a, well, we do have a real problem on our hands, but is the problem worse than maybe I thought it was? I thought this would be embraced unilaterally by the punkers, or at least the punk news audience, and it was the exact opposite, Adam. Like, I was distressed by the response that this got.
See, I wasn't, because I didn't see any of that, but that's because I've learned to not look at what people are reacting to on the internet anymore.
Go ahead. I'll read some comments here, but go ahead. Like, this blew my mind.
So what I wonder is, I've definitely perceived that it's difficult to as a political punk artist, it's difficult to hit Trump in the same sense that I've heard a lot of stand-up comedians express that, like, it's difficult to write jokes about it, because everything that has kind of come out in the past 3 or 4 years has been like so unrelentingly loud, in terms of politics and scandals and all this stuff, it's all been at such a maximum. It's all been at such a peak. It's all operated on this level of, you know, something abhorrent will happen where that in any other, you know, U.S. administration would have been like the news story for 3 months. And it just is like a normal Tuesday in this era. And there'll be some other scandal of equal weight that'll happen like 2 days later. And just with that level of just like intensity, it feels almost powerless to have to, like, you know, stand up and speak against it, because it seems like it should be so obvious that people are against these things. Like, you don't need to, you shouldn't need to school anyone about, you know, about why it is bad that you're putting children in cages, right? Like, things like that. Whereas, say, during the Bush era, you could maybe argue, you know, the Bush 2 era, I guess is what I'm talking about here, right? You could get in there and you could argue, like, why this or that group of politicians had a, you know, particular worldview with regards to, like, you know, America's role in the world, and why that you agreed with or disagreed with. Like, you could get in there and make, you know, arguments that made a little bit more sense. And because I think those politicians, you know, right or wrong as anyone was at the time, was at least operating as a rational actor and within, like, the realm of, you know, relative facts, you could approach those things differently. Trump just gets up there and just babbles out so much garbage, you know, contradicting himself, you know, making things up, you know, claiming that everything that is not, you know, that is not on board with him is not only wrong, but is fake, right? So to come at all that stuff, you're left as a commentator or a satirist or as a musician of not really knowing how you're supposed to approach it, because it's not, it's so hyper real, right? Like, it's so frenzied. It's so unlike anything that anyone's had to kind of step out and contend with. Just the, like, the fact that he's just making up his own reality half the time means, like, how do you contend with that? So I wonder if a lot of the punk musicians that have tried to come out are releasing things that aren't quite resonating with people, not necessarily because musically they're not resonating, but just because they're not effective at, you know, truly hitting back against this administration. And I think about, like, say, like, the DOA record that came out, Treason, which was the album that came out. I mean, and DOA is definitely not a band that's ever been subtle by any means. But I remember looking at the videos and the songs and just, like, the overall presentation of it, and just thinking to myself that, like it's so obvious that it almost feels
cartoonish.
Like, why bother, right? And you know what? And I mean, I hate the knock on him because he's your buddy, but I felt the same thing about the the video that we spoke about recently from the from Jello and the Guantanamo School of Medicine, where it was just like a collage of anti-Trump memes that were running throughout the length of that song. And I'm looking at it and I'm just do we not have something a little bit more sophisticated that we can hit them with than this? But the answer is like, no, right? Like all the adults have left the room and, you know, everything's gone fucking crazy. And like, sometimes we don't have anything more sophisticated to hit them with, because what do you hit them with when they're questioning the very premise of reality that you would normally approach something with? You know, I hate the guy, but Donald Rumsfeld is not going to show up and like make up this like alternate universe that he lives in. He believes things that I disagree with, but he wouldn't try to gaslight me that's not the case, right? And we're all stuck in this world where like reality's been thrown out the fucking window. So what do you do? So I wonder if a lot of the reaction to, say, even Milo's songs here are people that are not so much frustrated that Milo wrote a political song with a ukulele, but maybe frustrated with the fact that like there's no bite, there's no bite from him, but that there's no way that a kind of conventional political punk song can bite the situation that we're in. Like, I wonder if that is a partial. There's also people that are going to be fucking crazy commenters on the internet. Don't get me wrong, but I wonder if that fuels a lot of people's.
I hear that, but I think that's the entirely wrong perspective to take, because, and this is why the right kicks the shit out of it. The left is, the right is like, yeah, Trump's our guy, and you don't see a bunch of people on the right to their discredit saying, actually, he's not that great, but they're like, yeah, he's the man. You know, no matter how many times he backstabs them, or how many ridiculous lies, or how many times he actually directly causes them direct real physical harm, he just lies, and they're like, yeah, they're banding together. On the left, when we got an important fight, you know, I'm not even saying I'm right or left, but I mean, I'm definitely voting for Biden, even though I don't like him, just because I think it's that important to defeat Trump. Why don't you, instead of trying to be too cool for school and then try, like, band together for the fight, and then after you win the fight, then improve yourself? That's the mistake they're making. You know what I mean?
My impression is that the modern left to me seems like really bad at making pragmatic decisions.
If Jello isn't doing political stuff, if Milo isn't doing political stuff, That's Jello's job, you know. And if Jello puts out a lovey dovey, I'll be like, oh, Jello sucks now. He puts out a fiercely political track, and people are bagging him off for that. Like that's Jello's job. You know what I mean? It's like,
John, to put this in the only perspective that I respect anymore, it's like Jello and Milo are they're flying around. They're flying around in their Federation starships. There's a Borg cube that's just like barreling in on them, and they shoot it with their phasers, and then the shields adapt on the cube. And then what do? You keep shooting it with your phasers? Well, I guess it's all you got. You got phasers, right? So you keep shooting it, but it ain't doing shit, right? And I wonder if just the futility of that is aggravating some people.
But see, that's the lie. And here's why. Star Trek Next Generation, maybe best show ever. When they shoot the Borg cube and it works the first time, they're like, yeah, hit him again, Worf. And Worf hits him again, and it doesn't work. Do they start blaming each other on Star Trek The Next Generation, Adam? Have you ever seen them on Star Trek Next Generation when they're not achieving their collective goal? Do they start yelling at each other and pointing and being too cool for school? Or do they go to the freaking board room, sit down, and have a meeting and say, we're so sad that Captain Picard got stolen from us by the Borg, but now's the time for us to band together and figure out new tactics and work together. And this guy says, maybe we do this. And that guy says, maybe we do that. And Geordi's like, maybe we should do this. And Dan's like, maybe we should do that. And eventually they make a plan using those ideas that end up defeating the Borg.
Sure, but what you don't see is that like a star system over, there's an older, like nebula class starship that's full of rejects that are just watching what's happening over on the Enterprise. And they're just chipping about how fucking pointless it is and playing Fortnite.
Well, you can't ever say it's pointless. You know what I mean? Listen, all right, you can have a car. One thing, it's to not interfere with other cultures that don't have warp drive or something. Go ahead, Adam.
That's right. The prime directive is really what we need here. Okay, so we've been through Leiden, we've been through Ice Cube, we've been through Milo. Who we got? Do we have anyone else? We got Crass. John, what did Crass do? Is Crass supporting Trump? Because I'm going to go lie down.
Check this out. Crass, every day I love Crass a little bit more. You know that song, every day I love just a little bit more, just a little bit more. Every day I love Crass just a little bit more. Three things. First of all, about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, Penny Rimbaud did an interview with Gavin McInnes, the Proud Boys guy, before everyone knew he was a Proud Boy, and maybe even before he was a Proud Boy or that thing existed. So somebody tried to ding Penny Rimbaud. They're like, Penny Rimbaud's a Proud Boy. He did an interview with Gavin McInnes 7 years ago. Bam! That day, Penny Rimbaud's like, no, actually, I did an interview with him 7 years ago because I knew him through Vice. And then I learned that he was a Proud Boy a couple of years ago, and I cut off all contact with him because he's a dick, and I think his views are abhorrent. Penny Rimbaud didn't use dick because he's classier than that. But Penny, Adam, we're losing John Lydon. Bum me out. We're losing Ice Cube. Bum me out. Penny Rimbaud, staying strong, Adam. Penny Rimbaud of Crass. I was so happy to see that. You know what I mean? Because, like, if I didn't have Penny, Adam, I don't know what I did. So first of all, Crass is still Crass. And honestly, like, man, it's like, I hate to sound like a dick. I might like Crass more than Clash and Sex Pistols now. I'm not sure. And not even in relation to current politics. It's Crass really did do what they said they would do, and they haven't ever wavered from their fundamental beliefs or values, something that we've lost in American politics right now. And that is so impressive when you think about how long they've been doing that thing. Second, it is awesome that Penny Rimbaud is still holding strong as Penny Rimbaud and not, you know, it would be interesting to hear their opinion on Brexit. It would be interesting to hear that. Second, I got the Crass reissues in the mail on Monday, I think it was, Tuesday. Or actually, it was Monday, I think. Adam, the newest version of the Crass reissues, fantastic. If you don't have the Crassical collection, run out and buy it right now. If you do have the older Crassical collection, maybe you don't need the new ones. Maybe you do. But if you don't have them, they are so phenomenally well done. Great sound, amazing art, amazing, great thing. Third thing, Adam, I forget the person's name, but there's like an amazing interview with Crass up at Bandcamp right now. I didn't see who did it, but whoever did it must be like the freaking greatest writer ever, because it's an interview with Penny Rimbaud, Steve Ignorant, G. Voucher, and Eve Libertine, and they just walk through the entire Crass discography on Bandcamp. And it is, if you want to know about Crass, if you know or know about Crass, but want some more cool facts, it's awesome, Adam. It is so well done. I don't know who did it, but it's like really well done.
I was going to ask you if you wanted to plug your big thing, but you know, you didn't need me to prompt you. So very good. So yes, our very own Mr. John Gentile, he went and he did this big, super involved, you know, full of facts and audio in interview that is over at Bandcamp right now. They kind of walk through the whole Bandcamp hosted aspect of the Crass discography. So you should go check that out, because Bandcamp are good eggs, even if they are throwing John a bone here. So all right, we have successfully worked through the thematically related chunk of punk people weighing in on politics this week. We have driven our letter writer, right off the reservation. And I'm sorry about that letter writer. We'll try to talk about something that is not that is not a political stance when the world is less on fire. But do you want to play a song, John?
Yeah, let's play some Crass. I was going to play like one of the I guess best, you know, Band from the Roxy. They Owe Us a Living. Punk Is Dead. They've got a bomb now. But let's play something off the second Crass album, Stations of the Crass. Let's play one of my all-time favorite Crass tracks, I Ain't Thick, It's Just a Trick.
Okay.
And you can get that at One Little Indie Records and get the reissues, and they are great.
Yeah, there we go. This is Crass.
Oh, yeah. When I got it all out there, say, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. When I mean I got it all out there, say, they have fast come because I ain't got me. I can't buy my thing that say, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me tell you what I got it out there. Tried to get me with a TV show. I wouldn't have none of it, no, no, no. Standards and values on a black and white screen. Sarah Farrah falls here acting me. She's got a lot that still they want you to think. Read between the lines, I've seen a missing link. Turn the fucking puppet in this function as you play. Be like me, girls, they become a real man. Link to the fall, or I take flesh. Don't use your brains when your body makes a splash. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, I've got it all up here. Say, oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, I've been, I've got it all out there. Say, say, fuck off, cause I ain't got no. I can't buy my thing to say. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Let me tell you what, I've got it up here. Trying to get me in the supermarket store. Bought what I wanted, then I said buy more. Man, it's all crap that my body really needs. Daily calibrate and food, suit and soy cream. Don't cut the lot, that's the favorite of two things. Read between the lines, you see the missing link. Buy these products, pay for the crap. Put up for the product, three quarters for the rap. Be a happy family, all the people on the bank. Buy up to the profit and you'll never look back. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, I've got it all up here. Say, oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, I think I've got it all out there. See, they are fucked up. They ain't got me. They can't buy my thing. That's it. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Let me tell you what, I've got it out there. Trying to get me with the learning and the books. The understanding and intelligent looks. All of the time they never saw me. They were just looking what they wanted to see. They got a lot, that's what they want you to think. Read between the lines, just see the missing link. Books are easy back, that's what they want you to do. Find you up in service to the privilege you. With the lines of history, say the way it always was. Send the shit in slavery, be one of us. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, I've got it all out there. Say oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, I feel I've got it all out there. Say, they have fucked up, they ain't got me. They can't buy my thing to see. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Let me tell you what, I've got it out here. Tried to get me with religion and with crap. Said I'll get to heaven if I acted real nice. They were just preparing her, twisting into me. Like a girl's in a pain of only misery. They couldn't look like what they want you to think. Read between the lines, just see a missing link. Funnel just a freak with immorality, see. Just another bit of how it's never been. Stand there in a pulpit, coming out of life. Offering forgiveness, then they talk about the life. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, I've got it all up here. Say oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, I think I've got it all out there. Say, they are back up, they ain't got me. They can't buy my thing to see. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Let me tell you what, I've got it up here. Trying to get me, but I won't be gone. Say I'm a misery, well, I'll say I'm not. But never set out to profit from another. Those mommy bastards would steal from their mother. They could have long, that's what they want you to think. Read between the lines, you see the missing link. Thunder and storm within the name of truth. Acceptance and morality, what they want from you is proof. Think there could be options, but there's something that they miss. They can't reach over, flow up, they just will have a piss. Oh yeah, oh yeah. We've got it all out here. Say oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, I've been doing it all out there. See, they are fucked up. They ain't got me. They can't buy my victims. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Let me tell you, I've got it out there. See.
Okay, we're back. That was Crass. They're a punk band. You may have heard of them. Okay, John, we're 50 minutes in. We haven't gotten through like the first chunk of our show yet. So we're gonna move swiftly and brutally through the rest of this thing. So the first thing I'm gonna do is I'm gonna cut this next story because it's not important anymore. The next thing we're gonna do is we're gonna talk about the Dead Kennedys because that is important. So the Dead Kennedys they released a remix of Chemical Warfare. And they are planning to re-release their entire debut record with the same remix treatment in 2021. So East Bay Ray, he put out the remixed version of Chemical Warfare online. John made a point of noting in his article here that when we mean remix, we mean, you know, they went back to the recorded audio tracks and, you know, assembled the song again based on that, you know, clearing things up, making sure the levels were maybe more appealing. And we did not mean a hip hop style remix, which I think no one thought. But anyways, so Ray went out. What?
When I first saw it, like we remixed Chemical Warfare. It's like a hip hop track. Like that sounds terrible, but it wasn't that.
No. Yeah, John. Okay. Anyway, so Ray added that they're actually planning on remixing the entire Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables record, and that's going to come out in 2021. So here's his quote. Here's what he said. He said, Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables is being remixed from the original multi-track tapes with the help of renowned mix engineer Chris Lord Alge. You call him Lord Alge or Lord Alge?
I say Alge.
Like I know, like he's one of these people that I've read his name 500 times, but I've never had to say it aloud. Okay, so Ray, I'm back in Ray's voice here. He said the first track to benefit from this treatment is Chemical Warfare, originally the last track on side one, which will be released to stream and download via Cherry Red and Manifesto on October 9th. While the original mix was cool for 1980, the band felt it would benefit from a fuller sound on the bottom end, i.e. more powerful bass and drums. The new version does just that, taking the music from 2D to 3D. Bassist Klaus Floride, guitarist East Bay Ray, and original drummer Ted think this new mix is excellent, adding depth without losing any of its original energy. In contrast, Jello Biafra thinks the new mix is, quote, terrible, quote. But the band's message has always been, quote, think for yourself, quote, and to not let others tell you what to think. Klaus, Ray, and Ted wanted to allow fans to decide for themselves. But don't worry, the original 1980 mix will remain available. So that's the end of his statement there. So you can find the remixed version of Chemical Warfare out there on the internet now. If you go to Punk News, the version of it that we linked that was running on YouTube has been pulled. So, you know, you'll have to find it elsewise. But it's out. You can go check it out. I believe I found a copy, John. It was someone else's YouTube upload, so I'm a little bit suspect, but I'm pretty sure I found a copy of this. And I sat down before the show, and I did a little comparison. Played a little bit of the original, played a little bit of that, jumped around. I feel I've reasonably done my homework on this more than I have otherwise. I'm sure you have. What's your thoughts on this? On this remix,
it's bad. Of course, people know that the Dead Kennedys legally is East Bay Ray, Klaus, and I guess DH might be a legal member of the Dead Kennedys. And Jello is a legal member, but essentially he's a non-voting member because it's always 3-1, and he always gets outvoted. And honestly, for a little while, the quote Dead Kennedys were actually doing a very good job doing archival stuff. Of course, Live at the Death Club, excellent live record. The one before that, Mutiny on the Bay, not as good. But then they actually put out a three-CD set of live stuff from Plastic Surgery Disasters and as well as Frank and Christ. And actually, the sound quality is okay, but the actual recordings themselves are great. Really, really interesting, good stuff. But I think they're out of material, so now they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. No one has ever thought that the original Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables sounded bad. In fact, it sounds great. I mean, it's an iconic punk record. You know, you could make the argument that Damage doesn't sound that great, but I like the way it sounds. You could make the argument that the Crass is feeding the 5,000 maybe doesn't sound that great. But Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables, which had contributions from, you know, Gaza X, as well as Paul of the Screamers, and as well as, I'm forgetting one other really important person, Paul Rosser, one other important Spot was involved in some of that stuff. It sounds great. It sounds like a pristine punk record. And so the Bob Marley state's been doing the same thing. They're remixing it not to correct a deficit or to, you know, highlight something. They're remixing it just because they have nothing else to do. So they're like, oh, let's just make a new mix because we have nothing else to do. And but not only that, the worst thing about this mix is it is a cliche bad mix, in that it's certain members that don't like other members are purposely mixing their contributions louder and mixing the other members that they don't like contributions quieter. And most notable is on the chorus here. The chorus of Fresh Fruit of Chemical Warfare is famous because it's got a double track Jello vocal, and it's got Jello's, I guess, more normal voice, and then it's got his high pitch voice coming over the top, and it's one of the most iconic choruses in the early punk scene ever. And they just completely stripped that out. They took out the high pitch, left in the low pitch. And so it took a very three-dimensional, interesting, somewhat weird song and made it almost a generic 80s punk song, early 80s punk song. And it's just bad. I mean, before the chorus, it sounds fine, maybe a little thicker. Oh, my God. I'm like people were like complaining about it. And I heard the first, you know, 30 seconds. I'm like, this doesn't sound that bad. And then the chorus, they like ruined the chorus. They really did. And so they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. This is exactly what Jello's been accusing them of since they took control of the band, if you will, just crass commercialism and just trying. It's ungainly in that it's either them just trying to make money, which actually I don't think it is that. What I think it is I think it's the members once again trying to reignite a beef with Jello. And, you know, Jello's not always the easiest guy to work with, but they're like, ha, we'll mix his vocals down low and that'll really get him. You know, no one thought this record sounded bad. Everyone thought it sounded great, and now they're just making it sound different, and it sounds worse.
Yeah, it's telling that they made the two points in the statement of both, you know, like hand waving away Jello's complaints by being like, yeah, Jello thinks it's terrible, whatever, right?
I actually appreciate that though. The effort to make it clear that Jello's not involved, which has been a Jello.
Yeah, well, see, that my initial read was that like, okay, and I actually thought it was kind of like, oh, they seem to have a little bit of a sense of humor about this, so maybe that's good. But the more that I read it now, they've taken some of the ammo away from Jello to be able to react to it, because it's like they reacted to it on his behalf. So anything he comes back with, it's going to be like, yeah, okay, Jello, we already know you think it's terrible. Don't worry about it. Whereas he may be able to step in and actually give like a fairly informed reason about like why it's a bad mix or something like that. So in retrospect, like I'm not as cool with that part of their statement as I was. But it's also telling that they made a point that like, you know, yeah, we're going to leave the original recordings available as well. And what that tells me is that they are not creating the canonical, better sounding, you know, they're not creating the version of this that sounds as it should. They're doing what you said, which is that they're creating a version of it that sounds different for whatever motivation that they have, and different in a way that to supplant the original, It couldn't. Like they're not even going to go that direction, right? Like they're not going to like George Lucas this and make it so that you can't get the version of Star Wars anymore that's not full of weird cartoon creatures, right? So then why, right? It's like what are they accomplishing here if they are going to make a like parallel version of the record while still retaining the original, because I guess they recognize that their version, while different, is, you know, certainly not going to supplant the original in anyone's canon. It just, it seems like it seems like an exercise in search of a purpose, I guess. So, but hey, if you really want a more bass heavy version of a Fresh Fruit, and potentially one that fucks up Jella's vocals in places, it's coming. Ain't nothing you can do to stop it. John, Eddie Van Halen died.
Sadly, yes.
So, this is a weird one to talk about because this episode won't be out for a little while after this has kind of like been worldwide news. So we definitely don't want to approach this from the standpoint of like, hey, listener, in case you didn't know, this famous rock guitarist has died. But you had a cool angle on this as we were chatting before the show. So so John, you are both a Van Halen maniac in mourning, but also someone with an interesting read on the punk scene. So how do you want to take it?
Sure. I, of course, like everything, even though this is quite sad in the family and it's tragic, it's sad when anybody dies of cancer, especially when they die relatively young. I think we were like 60 or something like that. In classy style, I'm going to make this all about me. And of course, I'm being flippant. Certainly sad that he died. And I'm sad when anybody dies from cancer. That is sad. I actually just had this conversation. I was actually at the at Wawa today, and I ran into somebody from a band that I like, and I was talking to them about this briefly. Is I've always been annoyed at the "we're too punk for you" angle, which is actually what we got with a lot of the Milo stuff. You know, I love AC/DC, I love Van Halen, I love all that stuff. You know, I actually was into that before I was into punk. I love Judas Priest. You know, Judas Priest is a little bit cooler, I guess. I love that stuff. And everyone is like too punk, either too punk for that is we only like Discharge, but that has been somewhat supplanted by or too orcore or beard punk for that, you know, or even too folk for that, which is ridiculous. So everyone acts way too cool for that stuff, you know. And then when one of them dies, everyone's like, oh, you know, I love that stuff, you know. Like Tom Petty, like no one at punk news talk or any in the punk news talking about Tom Petty. And then when he died, everyone's like, oh, I love Tom Petty. Tom Petty's so great, you know. Or Eddie Van Halen, like, I love it. Like, the punks acted as though Van Halen was stupid rock, hair rock, sellout stuff, you know. And I can prove, I mean, if you go back to some old punk news stuff where I'm talking about Van Halen, I'm getting trashed right and left, you know. But then when one of them dies, like, oh, I love Van Halen. I used to listen to Van Halen every week, or I listened to Van Halen all the time growing up, or, man, this is so sad. He influenced my guitar playing a lot. I'm so annoyed at the punk scene as a whole for acting way punk than they are, or acting like they're too cool for something until after that person dies. And they're like, oh, he was so cool, you know? And I mean, that's a core issue with the punk scene, is how it is phony in a lot of areas, and also how it's actually composed of a lot of people that are really insecure, and they're all trying to conform to a certain thing so they won't actually express their individual likes and dislikes, particularly when a certain group thinks makes them uncool. And so me as a fan who has taken abuse at him for loving AC/DC, for loving Van Halen, for loving Led Zeppelin for years, then some cool person says, oh, they were cool. Then everyone's like, oh, yeah, you're right, cool person. Van Halen was great. I've been suffering in the punk scene on behalf of Van Halen for decades. And now everyone's like, oh, Van Halen's great. You know what I mean? And it just goes to show, I love punk. I love the punk scene. But this highlights one of the larger flaws of the punk scene, if you will, or at least the underground punk scene.
A large part of why I think a lot of us got into punk was in rebellion against the either the music of our parents or the music that we felt was boring and not thrilling us in our younger years. And I could definitely see why, especially kids these days, I think, coming up into things would have a fairly dim view of a lot of quote unquote classic rock artists, because we're served that stuff in the most boring, you know, boomer friendly way possible. Like you can you can drive across North America and basically listen to the same radio station in every town. And it's always, you know, it's, you know, the same DJs and the same short playlist of, like, you know, classic rock songs. And, you know, you can start listening to Panama on one coast and you can finish listening to it by the time you get to the other coast. Right. So I've got to imagine that, like some kids that got into underground music because all that stuff just seemed so conventional and boring could, you know, have an, you know, maybe an uninformed ill view, but an ill view on artists like AC/DC and Van Halen and whatever. So, you know, I get it. I think it's one of those things you definitely grow out of, but I get it.
But it'd be one thing if they genuinely did not like Van Halen or Led Zeppelin or AC/DC. But what it really is they all love Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, and Van Halen, but hide it. And then when one of them dies, like, oh, it's so great. And meanwhile, they've been treating me like a dick for the past 15 years for loving AC/DC when they all secretly loved AC/DC too.
Well, I mean, it could just be the whole universe trying to fuck you.
Yeah, it could be. Probably.
Oh, okay. All right. So we're over the hour mark, John. There's some other stories, some music we wanted to talk to people about. But what should we do? Should we cut it all? Should we, like, move it all next week? Should we jump on the one I know you're itching to talk about? What do we do?
If you want to cut, we can cut and hit the one thing I really want to talk about next week, or we can do it now and wrap this bad boy on up. What do you want to do?
Oh, okay. We hit people a lot of politics. Let's wrap this sucker up. We'll bring back the four that we wanted to talk about in the next week here, because they're all interesting things that we are worth talking about. And yeah, so we'll do that. So, you know, podcast@punknews.org is how you can write us mail. If you want to complain about our blatant liberal politics, then you want to write Ricky@wherever Ricky went.com because he'll field your problems there, because I don't want to.